Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. We need to start letting people hear the getting ready for the radio show. Like,
you mean
four
the part
times,
where I told you to shut up?
Like, four times leading up to this, you told me to shut up because we should talk about it on the radio.
Like, yeah, I think our best shows are the ones we don't actually have on air. Yeah, at least that's what I'm going to sell people when they go, boy, this sucks. Well,
you should hear what never makes the air.
Exactly.
That's exactly how we should do it. Look, if we were back to terrible Thursday night football last night, I could care less whether you watched. Thankfully, there were some amazing other games to watch, whether you were watching baseball playoffs, if you stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch the Flyers lose. What's going on, Jeff?
All I know is Jason started when we got in here with, it should have been the Phillies last night. I was watching the Guardians and the Yankees, and it should have been the Phillies.
I'm watching baseball stadiums go crazy, and I'm thinking, it'd be really fun if that was Philadelphia fans. Now, not that it should have.
And then I had to remind you that it couldn't be because the Phillies are not in the American League, but that's okay.
Well, the details. But we'll get to the postseason in a second. I want to ask you, did you watch the end of year press conference with Dombrowski and Thompson?
You know how annoyed I am. Why would I watch? See, you have a different perspective on sports. You seem to dive into the misery. You seem to like swim in it. I choose to get away from it. Yeah. I get at my aggravation out and then I walk away from it. You choose to sit there and say, I'm going to wallow in this as long as possible, and I'm going to keep listening to people say stupid things that don't mean anything.
Says the
just
guy.
So I can get aggravated more.
Says the guy.
So the answer is no, I did not.
Said the guy who texted me and said, I'm going to play the role of Jason, and sent me the second half season stats where they saw the fewest pitchers in the strike zone, third highest spring rate, highest chase rate. And here's the summary of what I got from the press conference. It's all okay. A few big games. No need for serious change. Let's run it back.
Yep.
His comments directly were, I don't think we need to add more star players. We have about as many stars as anybody in baseball, which I believe is true. You need role players who will do what their roles are. We're talented enough to win. We just didn't play very well.
Okay. I'm about to make, you know, I'm always telling you that you think the sky is falling. I am literally going to, if I were you, I would put whatever you can over your head. That hat's not going to, the sky is really heavy, and I'm telling you, it's about to fall on your head. Ready for this?
Yes.
Are the Mets as good as the Phillies right now? Close? Are they close?
They will be next year. They've got $70 million in dead money.
No. I believe they have like $100 and something million coming off the payroll.
Yeah.
So,
and they found Vientos, and they've got Lindor. Like, they're a younger team.
Right.
And I don't think that they're
just beat them. And they just beat them. And Juan Soto is a free agent.
Well, that, if the
Mets sign Juan Soto while the Phillies just run it back.
That won't work. I don't think you can just run it back. I'm hoping that he was just kind of, I'm not going to show my cards. That's just
that's his MO.
Yeah, that's just me. Right. Is that me being hopeful or me looking at his history? Like, I didn't expect him to go in and say, we're going to blow the whole thing up. This was a disaster. I didn't expect that. And I'd kind of be surprised if I got that. I'm hoping that he's just saying all the right things right now to then go and make some moves. Because I don't think you can run it back with this team in this lineup.
I still want to know what happened with Alec Bohm. That should have been the question that should not have gone unanswered in this press conference.
Why wasn't it pushed more? I mean, you saw a meltdown from a guy who was an all-star and people said he was going to get, batting average championships, led the league in doubles, and then couldn't find the plate. Sorry to make you revisit this.
He led the league in doubles. Who cares?
Well, okay.
Who cares? If you lead the league in doubles, that's wonderful. You're a good hitter. He was a first round pick who's 6'5", 6'6".
In fairness.
And has very little power.
In fairness.
And in fairness, He has Schwarber, Turner, and Harper hitting ahead of him. I hate to tell you, even you could get 90 RBIs.
In fairness,
if you had those three guys in front of you.
There were questions about him from the day he was drafted, because you and I were doing a minor league show then. And we sat with people who talked about many of these exact things. And your first interview reflected an attitude that has shown on the field. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, yes, but I'm talking about now. I know who he is. At least I believe it. I got to look him in the eye and ask him questions. The question is, why in the world are we not focusing on the fact, or why is the media not focusing on the fact that he was benched? And the explanation wasn't, it's a matchup thing, as far as I recall.
No, he was benched because of how he's performing.
Exactly. This was not a matchup change. This was a guy who made the All-Star game like 3 months before that.
And then got benched in the playoffs.
And somehow was being benched in the biggest game of the year.
But run it back, Jeff. It's all set up to run back.
To me, the two guys that you need to replace most on this team, as far as hitting, are Bohm. I just think it needs to be different when it comes to Bohm and Marsh. I just don't think you can run it back with it. I have to live with the albatross of Logan O'Happy is a guy, especially now that JT is going to be 34 going into next season, and he's clearly.
We knew this was going to happen, by the way. You've been telling me this since my love affair of signing JT.
Yeah.
And this is going to happen with all of these guys. They're signed for contracts so long that they will decline before our eyes, because that's what the body does over time. So,
well, you have to hope that this doesn't turn into 2011, 2012 without having a World Series. Like, it was forgivable that the Phillies did this
because they had won
the World Series.
Yeah.
Doing it with your all-time greats and Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, Carlos Ruiz and Ryan Howard and Shane Victorino and all of those guys. That was the heyday. That was the glory days. And yes, it was okay.
But those guys weren't all-time greats until they won the World Series. These guys had a chance to be all-time greats, and they've blown it so far.
They Harper and Schwarber have a chance to be all-time greats. There's nobody else on this team that does. JT Realmuto is not going to go down as an all-time.
Carlos Ruiz is not an all-time great baseball player. He is a legend in this city. This team had a chance to be legendary in this city because we fall in love with our teams. And they shit the bed. And I'm watching the Dodgers and the Mets. And the Dodgers are up to 30 walks in their series against the Mets. And the Phillies had 16. So don't tell me you can run it back when I'm watching a team follow the strategy that everybody knows they have to follow, including the coach.
How many times did Shohei Ohtani score yesterday?
He's still scoring this today. I wouldn't pitch to him if I were them at this point. It is not going well. They're the second team, the Dodgers are, to win three games in a series by 6-plus runs. The Dodgers have outscored the Mets by 21 runs so far. That's the highest run differential by a team in the first four games of postseason all time.
And Freddie Freeman did not play last night.
Did not play. And so, you know, they head to game five. Dodgers are up 3-1. See what happens there. Baseball is halfway to their dream television matchup of Dodgers-Yankees.
And the Yankees-Guardian game.
And then Cleveland screwed
insane.
Cleveland screwed the pooch for them. They were moving towards Dodgers-Yankees. They could move the series up. And this is how it unfolded from the eighth inning on.
Can I set it up with something?
Sure.
All I've heard all season is Class A is as good as, if not better than, Mariano Rivera.
And that's how he has pitched.
He's not. Mariano Rivera did this for an entire career with one pitch. You knew it was coming and you still couldn't hit it for a career.
Class A
was really good. But in the eighth inning, he was really bad.
Class A came in the game.
He let balls go really far.
Class A came in the game about 7:45 Eastern. At 7:49, Aaron Judge hit the game-tying home run. At 7:52, Stanton hit the go-ahead home run. At 8:41, they probably registered on the Richter scale in Cleveland when Noel hit the game-tying home run with two outs at two strikes. And it was a blast. And then at 9:01, David Fry had a walk-off, and there was the coolest angle from outside the stadium where you could see it start to shake, and then you could see the fireworks go off, and it was awesome. It was
and
so
by
cool.
the way, I'm still trying to figure out who Noel is.
He's a rookie.
What is his nickname? Big Christmas?
Big Christmas. It's a great nickname.
It is a great nickname.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wish I had a name that would lend to that. Springer doesn't lend to anything. It lends to stupid nicknames. Big Christmas is an awesome, awesome nickname. And Clase, for what you were saying there, in 74 and a third innings during the regular season, Clase allowed 2 home runs and 5 earned runs. In 5 2/3 postseason innings, he's allowed 3 home runs and 6 earned runs.
I think we need him in the Phillies bullpen. He would fit in really well.
So no, he is not Mariano Rivera. Can I just bitch for a second about television?
Oh, here we go.
It's embarrassing.
Is this a ratings thing?
Well, it's just embarrassing that baseball airs on FS1 while the Masked Singer airs on Fox. It's playoff baseball. It drew 6 million people on FS1, 2.8 million for the Masked Singer. Just stupid to me. But on the ratings side, did you see how many people in Japan are watching this baseball?
Why would I care?
Oh, because it matters for the game. It's the international growth of the game. There were more people, 7.5 million people, at 9 a.m. in the morning in Japan watching the game than the 5.7 million people watching here in America for the Dodgers, Padres.
Well, that's what, look, it's the reason that Yao Ming was so popular for bringing in a Chinese audience. Shohei Ohtani's worth every penny, no matter what he does for the Dodgers, just because of that.
They're not even paying him this year. What's he making? 50 cents deferred?
How many jerseys does Shohei Ohtani sell in Japan? Forget Los Angeles.
Yeah. No, it's pretty crazy.
And can I just bring up this one thing again? The Angels did not make the playoffs with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout.
It's stunning. I don't understand.
For all the organizations that have had worse records over the years and people say are the worst organizations, I'm sorry. You had two of the greatest players of a generation.
And they couldn't do it.
And didn't make a single playoff with them.
I don't get it. We're going to...
Wait. And let Ohtani go for nothing.
For nothing. They could have traded him.
Zero.
They let him walk. Yeah, it's bad. Terrible. Just absolutely terrible. We're going to get to Miren Fader from The Ringer in a little bit, talk about her new book, Dream, the Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon. So, Jeff, here's a transition. Let's talk about Joel Embiid's health, man. We are going into the season where we left last season. Is anybody healthy? Paul George, hyperextended knee. Thankfully, it's not worse. We can't have nice things. Joel Embiid already on knee watch.
Wait. You said, thank God it's not worse. Are we sure?
No, I'm not sure. I don't believe anything that they say on injury reports.
Okay.
Because they never told me that Embiid was going to the doctor because he played in the Olympics and he was supposed to be okay.
It was scheduled.
Yeah, scheduled.
We don't know when it was scheduled.
Scheduled.
But it was scheduled.
He says that he won't play in back-to-backs anymore, which is probably smart, but sucks to hear. And then Jared McCain.
You can't say it.
No.
You can't. The league put rules into place to specifically avoid this.
Are they going
to
get fined again?
If they don't, I will be shocked. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to say, we didn't really mean it. We'll just figure it out day by day. And by the way, is he not playing the first of those games? And more importantly, are the tickets going to be cheaper for the second of back to back?
Come on.
Why not?
Oh, what a silly comment.
Okay.
Have they ever discounted the, did they discount the tickets in the process era?
If they're going to make a decision that their star player is not going to be intentionally not going to be playing
attorney in back-to-backs,
then I think that the product should cost less. I know the answer to the question.
I know. That's why
I'm just saying we do have staggered pricing in sports now.
If
we're going to have staggered pricing, then there should be discounts also if you're going to intentionally water down the product.
I agree with you, but I don't think we're going there. That's just not going to happen. Jared McCain.
They have a new arena to build.
They do.
Oh, God. In New Jersey.
We are not
or Chinatown
getting,
or somewhere.
Not talking arena this week. We've done too much of that lately. I'm the guy saying no arena talk. Jared McCain spent the night in the hospital with a bruised lung the other night. That looked like it hurt when he fell. Yeah. I texted you again. I'm like, we can't have nice things. Mm-hmm.
And what did I say?
I don't know.
You can have nice things. They're just broken.
They're just broken. Yeah. I mean, seriously, we've gone through like thoracic outlet syndrome, peanut allergy, a bruised lung, stomach issues. I mean, what haven't we heard as fans for reasons that our players are not on the court?
I don't know, but at least we have Ricky Cantl.
We do. We mm-hmm. do. You know who isn't on the court, though? Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers. And why
does James Harden knows how to pick a winner, doesn't he?
He does. Why does that matter for the Sixers? Because they have the Clippers 2028 unprotected first and the top three protected swap in 2029 from that James Harden trade.
And here's the sad thing for anybody that's listening to the show for the first time. Jason will watch every Clippers game
for that
now purpose. Until 2027.
Yes.
Just to see what draft pick we get in 2028.
So I was watching preseason.
And you're not denying.
No, not at all. I was watching preseason Lakers overtime basketball last night at 12:30 while the Flyers game was ending. I'm just a loser. And that's okay. Like, my wife accepts that, and you still do a show with me, and my kids know who I am. But that's who I am. That's what I do.
Okay, since you were up watching the Flyers, yeah. What's the biggest need? Goalie?
Fedotov didn't look great. Fedotov, mm-hmm. is that how you say it? He was shaky, but the defense was more concerning. They give up a lot of opportunities. It was just a wide-open game. It was fun to watch, though. I mean, Michkov is unbelievable to watch. And Luchenko, I mean, you're watching these young guys skating out there. I mean, 18 years old, I could barely tie my shoes.
Tomorrow is going to be, for those that are going to a Flyers game, will probably be the most exciting Flyers game in a decade.
Well, and that's the cool thing. So, like, I've never taken my kids to a hockey game. And mm-hmm. they're kind of getting into hockey now with Mitch.
How often do they swear?
And Luchenko. They'll swear more watching hockey.
Go to a Flyers game?
If I'm being honest, they'll swear more just watching the political ads in between the sports that are on right now. I feel very differently about those ads as a parent than I did before I had kids, by the way. Just pointing that out. Something else I watched this week. Have you watched any of the WNBA finals? It's some amazing basketball.
No, but did you the latest is that there's another league starting up, a 3-on-3 league, and they've apparently got 26 out of the 30 players already signed up, and they're making a move to try to get Caitlin Clark to play in this.
The league's spearheaded by Brianna Stewart and Nafisa Collier. They're looking to go.
Do we get a team in this?
I don't know. We're still trying to get a team. I keep hearing about, WNBA and WSL. I don't know. We haven't gotten anything yet. But, this is an alternative to players going overseas during the WNBA offseason. People don't necessarily realize that with their salaries and contracts, they don't make enough to not do stuff in the offseason.
Okay, but can I just point something out? We just talked about the Sixers.
Yes.
And the fact that the NBA players need to take off on back-to-back nights. And the WNBA players don't play enough in their regular season that they don't take time off, but go play in another league in the off season.
Yes.
There's quite a dichotomy, and yet they get paid a whole lot less money.
Yes, it is rather.
So somebody explain this to me, that the NBA players can't stay healthy anymore for the same number of games that I grew up watching them.
I don't understand it.
And Moses Malone was able to play a whole season.
I got questions for Miriam when she comes on about Moses Malone.
Yeah, well, see, I'm segueing there. I'm getting us ready. I mean, Akeem Olajuwon did not take off back-to-back nights.
No.
Even though the owner was blaming
him for accusing him of doing that. Yeah,
exactly. But somehow, as technology's gotten better and health is supposed to have gotten better and the way they work out and take care of their bodies is supposed to, apparently, their bodies break down more. And I'm lost as to why that's necessary, because the Sixers I grew up watching in the 80s with Dr. J and Charles Barkley was not exactly the pillar of what a healthy athlete
didn't
should look
like.
Didn't
he eat McDonald's at practice? Wasn't that like a thing where he like had bags of McDonald's at practice, and like people made.
Well, Embiid was doing Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
So, but Charles Barkley, again, you didn't see him taking off back-to-back nights.
His name was literally the round mound of a rebound.
Yeah. So explain this to me. Why can't they stay healthy, or why are they saying that they can't stay healthy?
You're asking the 45-year-old that's falling apart on his own without playing a sport why they can't stay healthy? I mean, I have no idea why, but it's definitely been a change, and load management is more the norm than the exception now.
You said the dirty word.
Tell me it's not, though.
You said the dirty word.
Every team goes into the season figuring out how they're going to manage their rosters.
When does spring training start again? Because I can't stand. See, I can't stand the winter because I can't stand the word load management.
Well, you know what else you can't stand?
What?
Tony Bennett retired at Virginia 20 days before the start of the season. What the hell's going on in basketball?
He did it his way.
He definitely did it his way. The transfer portal window will now open for those players for 30 days. Where are they going to go?
I don't know.
I mean, class is already...
As you pointed out to me before the show started, there's already preseason basketball, which I didn't even know was a thing.
I watched Rutgers last night. I never thought that there would be 40 scouts at a Rutgers preseason basketball game, but that's what happened last night. And I'll tell you what, Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper are for real. They are going to be fun to watch. You know, I reached out to see if we can get Coach on again. We've talked to Coach Beichel in the past, but they're going to be a fun team to watch. I have no idea if they'll be as good.
No, they're going to be two fun players to watch. The question is whether or not they have enough around them.
So I will tell you, you know, we talk about role players and guys that fit. It looks that Beichel put together a roster, not just two guys. He put together guys that can pass and that can shoot off the wing and that can space the floor and play defense. It was really fun to watch. Yes, preseason game, I'm not going overboard, but they're playing St. John's. Both teams were legit playing huge runs in the game. It was just fun to watch. And I'm not used to that as a Rutgers fan. I've never had...
Well, enjoy it for one season because they're gone after one.
They are, but now he's got some of the top recruits in the next class too. So if he figures out how to play the NIL game and starts to be that pipeline where other teams haven't, like you start to build something. Now, again, I'm concerned.
Does Rutgers have an NIL pipeline? I mean, do they have a general manager? Do they have? I thought
right now they don't have an athletic director.
That's what I was going to say.
And they also don't have a school president because he's leaving. So. And that athletic director story is not good, by the way. That is not good. He said that he had heart issues. He had love issues, it appears. And there's lots of investigations.
The love has to do, though, with the heart.
Yes, that is true. Okay. Did you care that USC let a Penn State fan run out with them on the field for Penn State USA?
I can't get into this.
I'm just wondering if you care.
I care deeply. I just... Like you sent me a text that made me just want to pull over to the side of the road and scream. Like,
would you rather talk that or Ohio State?
That if Michigan would sell the opportunity for an Ohio State person to run under the MGO blue flag and hit it on the way out of the tunnel.
Oh, so I found a button there when I sent it that way. I've made it relevant.
Oh yeah, I pulled over to the side of the road, and screamed, and then continued with my day.
Because you wouldn't have cared if I just said, "Hey, look at this schmuck." But because I said it, like, could you imagine Ohio State? Yeah,
you brought Michigan and Ohio.
I'm so glad I could do that. Mm. Speaking of Ohio, the Eagles barely beat the Browns last week. I'll take a win in the NFL.
Oh damn! I almost made it through I was trying so hard to come up with a mishmash of subjects.
But they play the
Giants.
Don't
even care if anybody's listening at this point. I just wanted to see if I could get through a show.
No, you've gone without through talking so about the many Eagles. Weeks without me bitching about the Eagles. We are definitely talking
on
about
the air. You bitch about them off the air.
Regularly. I spare you during the games, though. I do not blow you up the way I do some other Eagle fans. Are you?
Well, yeah, because I ignore it half the time because I got my own issues.
Well, you're a Giants
and they're all colliding.
Yeah, right.
In one weekend, this weekend. Seriously. On Sunday with the Giants and the Eagles.
Okay, so we'll talk about whatever the game last week was. They won the game. That's what matters.
You beat the Browns.
I understand.
That's very exciting. You beat a team.
Coach was very into it.
Disaster.
Yelling at fans.
For the quarterback, huh?
I love it when we can come out of the game talking about how the coach reacted to the fans. There's nothing more that I appreciate than that being the storyline.
Is there any chance that Jeffrey Lurie called him into his office?
He did apologize the next day. At the presser, he was very defensive. The next day, he apologized. I don't know who told him.
I don't know if you have the words there. If you want to read that apology and call it an apology, come on. I'm sorry if my enthusiasm was directed in the wrong place or something stupid like that.
By the way, the other fan, the guy who he was apparently
How about not worrying that there's fans there and worry about what's in front of you?
That's what I care about more. What's the old saying? When you care about the fans, you're soon to become one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, put on blinders. Coach your damn team.
He should go coach the Jets. He and Woody Johnson would be perfect for each other.
Don't worry about what somebody in the third row who had a couple drinks and can't even remember what he said is saying to you. It's just silly. All right, so we go
You're involved in your job and you're focused on something. Do you notice all the stuff going on around you?
No.
Okay. Well, why is he worried about that?
I have no idea.
And he's the leader. He's supposed to be telling his own team to ignore that and focus on the game.
And you got players coming out afterwards saying, well, we told him to be himself. I'm sorry. He's the coach. You're the player. He's supposed to tell you how to be. He's supposed to know how he is. That is not what this is.
I love Brandon Graham. Because of his Michigan ties, but that was just a ridiculous statement.
I don't want to go out of the game focusing on the coaching. It's just infuriating. All right, so let's talk.
But this week you got the Giants.
Do I, though? My best thing that happened is that your left tackle is gone. Like, you say you got the Giants, like you got an easy win.
The one guy who's not a trash can?
Yes. The one guy who's not a trash can is now out for the season. So now you've got four trash cans and a replacement trash can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my hope, is that the defensive line...
But Malik Nabers is back.
That's my concern.
Tyrone Taylor is turning into a real running back when he was a wide receiver in college.
Yes.
Wandale Robinson... if it weren't the quarterback who has to get them all the ball, they'd actually have very good skill position players, even with the loss of Barkley.
I told you all along, Nabers is going to keep Daniel Jones employed, and I'm going to love every second of it.
I don't think so. I think if the Giants finish bottom half of the league, which they should, I still think they go for a quarterback. I don't think that Daniel Jones is going to be here. Well, I hate to say next year, because he will be, but in 2 years.
We got less than a minute left. We'll see what happens in the game this week. I don't care about picking or not, whatever.
I would like you to pick.
I think the Eagles win the game. They should, but... Yeah. I have no confidence in what this team is. I don't even know what the hell they're running.
Well, I hope that Sirianni can pay attention to the field. Or maybe not.
30 seconds left. Big trades in the NFL last week. Amari Cooper, Devontae Adams traded. Tom Brady.
Amari Cooper matters to the Bills because it fills a need. The Jets just decided to go get somebody that Aaron Rodgers wanted, which is odd because Devontae Adams didn't want to play with Rodgers, which is why he ended up in Las Vegas.
Well,
so I don't really understand this pairing, but the last thing the Jets needed was a wide receiver. They needed a whole bunch of other things, including offensive linemen, and they decided to go get themselves another wide receiver.
Yeah, they need to keep Aaron Rodgers upright. Why don't we head to break, and when we come back, we'll talk some basketball with Miran Fader. Stick with us.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains, and the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Heart of Sports. We're going to talk some basketball here, and we're going to bring on the Ringer's senior writer, Miran Fader. Congratulations on your new book out this week, Dream, the Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So what's it like to hold this book? This is your second one, but you go and hold it. Is it real yet?
It feels surreal. You're holding it and you're like, okay, objectively, this thing exists. It is on the shelf. I can hold it. But you're also just shocked that it finally came together. You know, books are hard, but it's really a rewarding day.
So this is your second book, and it comes on the heels of writing about Giannis, which is kind of, I think you've said this is like the prequel to that book. So how did writing that book lead to you covering Hakeem in this book, who you've said is kind of criminally underrated?
Yeah, and I maintain that. But yes, I think with the Giannis book, it was his biography, but it was also kind of a portrait of just the modern landscape of basketball. And so I tried to tell the larger story there of how, you know, international players, specifically African players, are dominating the NBA. And I just started thinking of pioneers and, you know, classic players in history that haven't been talked about as much. And so I really wanted to know, you know, who set the stage for Giannis and others like him. And immediately, you know, my mind came to Dream. And even though he was before my era, you know, I had such a respect for him and what he had achieved. And I really noticed how, you know, he's really left out of so many conversations of who's the best or your all-time five. And coupled with his, you know, really interesting backstory with religion, I just thought it would make such a compelling book.
To me, the most amazing part of the book was the number of people that you interviewed and the fact that the theme that I got from the book was almost it takes a village, that right. That it was all that you show all the people that were so influential in his life and now how influential he is to the basketball community and his community as a whole. What was it like to interview, what was it, over 250 people for this book?
Yeah, 266. Thank you for pointing that out, because I wanted community to really shine through in the book, because even as I'm trying to show how Hakeem paved the way for others, there are so many that paid the way for him. And I just wanted to this book to give flowers to all of them, whether it's Moses Malone or this player, this Nigerian superstar, Yomi Sangodei, Carol Dawson of the Rockets. There's so many people that helped him excel. I love the interviewing process. And what's fun about Dream is the second you call anybody about him, they're like, oh my God, this one time he shook this person so bad. And oh, and this one time he embarrassed me and oh, he was my nightmare. And so it was almost fun. You forgot you were like actually working because you're just talking 90s hoops with these people. So I loved it so much.
Wait, just Jason, before you continue, you just described the Dream as other people's nightmare.
Yes.
if like you look Michael at some Cousin. Of the quotes, that's what yes. It was. I mean, you could tell us Michael Thompson and Dominique Wilkins yes. were not fans and had ways to practice.
Yes. And I'll put it in the words of Michael Cooper, another great interview. He was like, I hated Dream, hated. And it's a really, really strong word to use. But, you know, Michael Cooper, lockdown Michael Cooper, that to me is a form of respect. So when I think of the way he said, I hated him, but I had to love him because he was so good. You know, Cooper was talking about how he'd get caught, you know, on defense being mesmerized, just watching what Olajuwon did. So these people are totally afraid of Olajuwon on the court. Like, he's such a menace. But then afterward, they're all just like, wow, I can't believe we played against him. And I just love to hear that respect, you know, all these decades later.
The respect that I enjoyed was from Robert Parrish, who said he would have bought a ticket to watch him play. I mean, that's the ultimate respect if a great in the NBA says that they would have paid to watch you. You know, if Shaq says he was the only person he could never intimidate. Like, those are some big words from big people in the history of this league.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, it's sincere. I think that's what's really cool, is that if you are a former NBA legend or you're a current NBA player, the respect you have for Dream is so evident. I mean, the way people talk about him, it's almost like with reverent tones. There's just this mythical aspect of Dream that people are just, they respect. And so I wanted, you know, the average fan or the basketball lover who may be younger and doesn't know Dream's legacy to kind of hear it from those that played against him to say, yeah, this is a guy you need to remember. History is important.
Can you talk about how it's kind of an accident that he was over here playing? He wasn't even a basketball player. He's a handball player. So talk about the Dream's journey to here, and you debunk a lot of myths in this book about that too.
Yes. I mean, first of all, he doesn't start playing basketball till age 17, which is crazy. In our world, if you're not 12 years old and getting offers from D1 schools, people call you a late bloomer, which is ridiculous. So imagine at 17, he picks up basketball. The sport really isn't even that popular in Nigeria. Basketball only really started getting going there in the, you know, early 1960s. So he's so much more enamored by handball, soccer, what we call soccer, football, even volleyball, track. He just did everything. playing. I mean, to this day, he's an excellent table tennis player, like competitive.
That would be,
you know,
scary to stand across a ping pong table from him.
I would never want to face him in table tennis. I could just imagine the speed at which
think about the reach he would have.
Yeah, he just puts the
reach up to the net and just stop it there.
Oh, insane. I mean, I'm afraid like somebody would get injured. Like, he's that powerful. But yes, he... He was just this fantastic athlete. And these coaches who I talked to in Nigeria were like, we had to almost like stalk him and convince him to play basketball. And even when he said yes, he still continued playing these other sports. He had to be shuffled on and off the court from his handball game to his basketball game. And to your earlier point, you know, there's so much mythology around how he goes from, I just picked up a ball, to 3 years later, I'm in the Final Four in America, considered the number one draft pick. What is missing in between all of that is narratives, facts, information. And at the time, people just kind of got swept up in this amazing story. Wow, he came from, quote, nowhere to success without really interrogating the kind of holes in the narrative there.
Talk to us about, this was the time where Moses Malone really helped him in his life when he comes over to Houston. And, you know, people think about it when they learn that as, oh, he helped him as a basketball player. Not really. He helped him as a man and a person. Can you talk about the relationship between the two of them, also Carol Dawson, people who had huge influence on developing him as a person and a man and a player?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your point, like the off-the-court mentorship was even more important than the on-court mentorship. You know, starting with Moses Malone, it was almost like a bigger brother. He would give Hakeem hand-me-down clothes. So Hakeem would be seen in these like matching sweatsuits and everyone's like, oh, where'd you get that? And, you know, Moses gave it to him. And Moses would take him in his Maserati. They'd drive around. They'd go to this place called Frenchie's. He really actually liked Hakeem as a person. And though he did see potential in him athletically, he understood that this person was a long way from home, pretty homesick when he first came over and needed a friend. And you talk to anyone about Moses Malone, he is the most giving. He was the most giving soul you would ever meet up until his death. I mean, he advocated for so many players with his role in the Alumni NBA Association. So I don't think Hakeem becomes the player he becomes without Moses. I don't think Hakeem becomes the mentor he becomes to people like LeBron, Giannis, Kobe without the example of Moses. Carol Dawson, who sadly just passed away, the former GM of the Rockets and former assistant coach, he was the ultimate big man coach. They called him CD. Every single day, he's working with Olajuwon on his drop steps, his post moves. I don't think people realize that when Olajuwon came to the Rockets, because he had only been playing for a few years, he really didn't have much offensive moves. I mean, he could run the fast break, catch the ball, and dunk it. That's what he did in college. But CD was really the first one that was like, okay, post work is an art. You got to go this way. You got to go that way. You got to have fakes. And so it was through the mentorship of CD that Olajuwon just makes leaps that rookie year, that second year.
The amazing thing to me, well, I was of that era. I remember those five Slamma Jamma teams and absolutely loved him. But you did realize at that point that that was the whole team. The whole team was run, gun, dunk, you know, play some defense, except against NC State at the end.
Right. Which anytime you ask anybody from Houston about that, it's almost like they want to hang up the phone on me. But yes,
I assume so that was the last question asked in the interview.
Yeah, exactly. What is that like? Just off the subject of Olajuwon for a second. What is it like when you ask? I mean, we do interviews all the time, but we don't usually are not in a position to ask questions that you know people don't want to talk about. So you know that this has to be part of the story that you're telling, but nobody in Houston wants to talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. And you know you have to do it. You know they're going to hate you, but you have to do it anyway. I like to empathize with the emotion first instead of just being like, can you talk about the heartbreak of that moment? Instead, I preface it. I probably sound like a, you know, rumbling on, but I, you know, remember just saying like, I know this is kind of difficult to talk about, but as somebody from Houston, can you please describe the emotion behind when that buzzer sounded? Because it continues to haunt to this day. And the only reason I'm asking you about this is because I think when Hakeem finally does win 10 years later in the NBA, it almost makes up for that loss. So I tried to like link it with, you know, the current thing, which is true. I do believe it makes up for that loss. But the legacy of Phi Slamma Jamma It's this exciting conversation. Everyone's giving you their favorite dunks. Oh man, Clyde Drexler jumped over that guy. And then this game, this happened. And then all of a sudden the tone just goes to like absolute sheer utter sadness. And you have to just kind of honor that and go with that.
I remember my jaw dropping and just staring at the television and going, right. I can't believe this is happening.
They couldn't either. I mean, looking back, I really had to sort of interrogate too, because Olajuwon was so much a part of that final play, and you could just see it in his face that he too couldn't believe it. It was shocking.
And that to me is another part of the book is that's so important, is because he comes across as this kind big man. People, I think, lose sight of how competitive he really was. Oh, and yeah. And the fact, like, you know, people forget he was drafted ahead of Michael Jordan, and yet he was as competitive in so many ways as Michael Jordan was. What did you learn, if anything, from talking to these people about his competitiveness, about this drive that he had, even though he only started playing the sport when he was 17?
The drive he had was so palpable. The insult that he would use if he felt like his teammates weren't playing as hard as him, he would say, "You do not love the game," which I love. I think that is so old school. That is so classic. It is so, you know, if somebody said to me, "You do not love the game," I think I would just reevaluate my whole life. But I think it really speaks to his competitiveness. And, you know, some people say they want to win, but like, you can tell when he played, he wouldn't just try to beat you. He would try to destroy you. People know him today as this very calm, stately man of peace, but he got so many ejections back then, and we really go through that in the book. And instead of it being a, you know, an issue of temperament, to me, I think it stems back to the competitiveness, because if you look at it, he's not the one instigating fights. People were fouling the crap out of him. I got people to admit that because they couldn't stop him. Like, they should have called it the dream rules. But because of that, he was like, "No, I'm not going to let you do this to me. I want to beat you." And so I think his response, the way that he handled it, it showed, you know, he was going to do everything he could to win that game, because oftentimes he just didn't have the help or support of his teammates.
And he learned that on his own.
Say that one more time.
Did he learn that on his own? The idea that, wait a second, people are purposely fouling me. They're trying to get me off my game. Or did he have a mentor that said to him, "Akeem, look, this you need to deal with this. Otherwise, it's going to get out of control."
Yeah. Well, the fascinating thing about that was I thought it when I started this project, you know, I thought that the ejections and the temper started in the NBA, but it actually began in college. And Coach Givey Lewis of Houston would say to him, "Look, they're always going to call the foul on the second person who reacts. That's just how it is. Don't react. Don't go for it." But of course, he went for it. And there's a famous fight against a UCSB player who actually returns in the book when they are adults all these years later, which I loved. And they both apologized. But when he gets to the pros, you know, Rudy Tomjanovich, who eventually becomes the head coach, he's an assistant coach slash scout at the time. And so after these ejections, Rudy's the one that's walking him to the locker room and basically saying, "Dream, you got to calm down. We need you in there." Carol Dawson would say, "Dream, like you've got to control it. We need you." But he was so competitive and wanted to win so badly, he just couldn't. And so all these people were trying to get through to him, but he just wasn't in a place to receive it yet.
The book kind of makes it seem that rediscovering his faith helps to control that temper and kind of channel that competitiveness. It's not just that on the influence on him, but how he rediscovered that I found fascinating. Can you talk about how a man sweeping the floor who wasn't Muslim himself helps him return to his faith?
Yeah, this was one of the most poignant stories in the book, I think. And I remember when I heard it and doing my reporting, I just kind of had chills myself. Because basically people know that Olajuwon somehow returned to Islam, or they erroneously say he converted to Islam. That's not true. You know, he was raised as a Muslim and then comes back. But it is in the moment that you're talking about, this random man is just sweeping the floor at the summit where the Rockets used to play after practice. And, you know, Olajuwon's never seen him before and nobody else is there. It's very eerie. And this random stranger just comes up to him and is like, "Mr. Olajuwon, are you Muslim?" And Olajuwon kind of stops because, he hasn't really, he hasn't gone to, a mosque in over 10 years, but he does say he is. And the man invites him to a local mosque. And Olajuwon is stunned because he had no idea there was one so close, like around the corner. And that day changed his life. He goes to the service. He is so overcome with emotion. He can feel it all coming back to him. All of the prayer that, his parents taught him, the devotion that they had, just the act of being on your knees and saying the prayers. It was so moving. And he just knew, like, I need this in my life. This is the thing that's been missing, right? Like, we've been talking about how successful he was on the court. People admired him. He was one of the toughest to go against. But inside, he was really, really empty. And in this moment, he just sort of realizes, like, something clicks. I need this back in my life.
Just one quick one before we move on. It wasn't just that how other people reacted. Rudy Tomjanovich had some really interesting comments about how he had to question himself and change because of what Hakeem did. Can you just talk about that briefly?
Yeah, I loved that interview with Rudy Tomjanovich because so many times we talk to coaches and we want, to hear how they made, the quote student better. But Rudy could not have spoken more highly about how watching Hakeem become more religious made Rudy himself look within and think about spirituality and think about, what does religion mean to him and think about how he can become a better coach, how he can get his point across. It's not about yelling, and I think it's so ironic, right? This is the man that walked Dream to the locker room after getting ejected and cussing out refs. And here Rudy is like, maybe I should not be yelling. Maybe I should be a little bit more like Dream.
You know, one of the stories that I always like hearing about is the friction that seems to be between stars and their ownership. People don't, I don't think, realize that there was a point at which the owner of the Rockets was accusing Olajuwon of tanking, of faking it. Tell us about that story and how close he was to being a dreaded Clipper.
Very close. In fact, Olajuwon was like, tell me where I need to report in training camp in LA. It was nearly a done deal in my reporting. It just came down to one player and then it was off. But it really almost happened. Things had been going really sour with the Rockets. They were losing. Their coach, Don Chaney, just couldn't seem to get through to players. The talent wasn't there. Teammates did not like playing with Olajuwon. They found him to be, really just isolated. And sometimes he struggled to pass out of the double team. The vibes were bad. And the GM accused him of faking a hamstring injury to sit out for contract talks and things like that. And Olajuwon, who prides himself on playing through injury, God knows he's been clocked in the head so many times even before that famous incident with where he had to wear the goggles, was so insulted that he just felt like, I can't play for an organization that accuses me of, purposefully lying about an injury. And so it was interesting. Because he goes to the mosque very often in the community, there were kids there that are now adults that remember him talking to them about how, they were saying, Dream, please don't leave. Please don't leave, because it's in the newspapers. Everyone knows about the feud. And Dream is like, they're saying I'm faking this injury. I can't, essentially, I can't stay. And he's just telling random kids that, which I think is hysterical and a sign of the times. But ultimately, he decides to come back because the trade doesn't go through. And it is only because of a 12-hour flight to Tokyo does he and the owner patch things up.
You know, I'm sitting here in Philadelphia, just so you know, and we've just been told that Joel Embiid's never going to play back-to-backs. And you're
I
talking,
just saw that.
and you're literally telling us about a great basketball player who prided himself on never missing games.
Right.
What would Olajuwon think if you could get inside his head of today's player and the idea that you can't play in back-to-back days?
I mean, load management is like a hysterical concept to those back then, especially without the amenities that the current generation has. You know, I actually would love to point your listeners to a great story that Chris Ballard did in Sports Illustrated about Olajuwon. And he actually talked about Embiid and, you know, what he thought of him. And, you know, he was a little critical. And so Embiid, as we know in from my book, really admires Olajuwon and looked up to him. And his mentors basically said, Olajuwon's the blueprint that you need to follow. But yeah, there were so many anecdotes I had about Dream, like, you know, he wasn't aware that he had blood clots and he's playing through it. He had an eye injury, played through it. You know, like in that era, you just didn't really, you just couldn't, the concept of load management just didn't exist. It wasn't even an option. It just didn't exist.
I just wanted to ask you about some of the parallels with Embiid, you know, starting his career late, loved soccer early on before basketball, was on bad teams earlier in his career, questions about roster construction around him, needing to find the right coach to make it work. I just find it interesting some of the parallels there, if you can discuss their relationship and how you view that.
Yeah, I actually thinking now about how Olajuwon's game really flourished, not just because he, you know, had his transformation religion wise, but I think Rudy becoming a head coach and developing that four out system that we see so much in the modern game and like spacing, how that changed everything for him. And I wish that Embiid had a similar coach. I just think that to me is the biggest parallel, I think. You know, both of it's weird because, you know, Embiid really only makes it because there is a pathway that Olajuwon started, right? He gets to go to an NBA Academy camp. He gets to go, you know, to all these things in the system of NBA Africa that were only started because of Olajuwon's ascension. So I really think Olajuwon made it possible for Embiid to even be found, right? Like, it seems like an accident that Embiid was found, but in fact, a lot of things sort of were already in place for him to succeed. And that to me is the legacy of Olajuwon. But I think there's a competitiveness in Olajuwon that I felt was so, it was so truly focused on basketball. It was just basketball, faith, family. And I think with Embiid, a lot of people sort of are thinking, you know, does he have that? Is he going to have that singular focus? But I think a coach could do wonders.
No, the one thing that struck me 40 years, it's now 40 years later since he came into the NBA, is it's hard for me to believe that 40 years ago, the NBA, which is now an international game, was not really the international game when he came into it, to the point that you talk about the fact that he wasn't really marketable and what a struggle that was.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I'm like looking through the archives for this book and I'm reading an editorial about how, you know, his name is too hard to pronounce. And, you know, is he as preferable as a, quote, American guy, which one New York Times editorial said. And I'm like, am I reading today's discourse? Because it sounds a whole lot like what we talk about when we talk about Giannis, sadly. Think about this. We talk about how underrated Olajuwon is now, even in his prime. He was underrated. So he wins his first two titles. And there is this editorial in the New York Times saying, despite these two titles, despite his great personality and what a role model he is, people just don't think he's marketable. He has a, quote, difficult last name. They talk about, there's all these dog whistles in there. And I think part of the reason for the motivation behind this book was to also show that side of this, right? When we think of international players today, your mind probably goes to Dirk. It probably goes to other white European players, you know, Stojakovic, the list goes on, but it never goes to Dream. And I think it's important that when we think of international players, we think of him, but also the kind of barriers that he had to go through because it was not so common at the time.
You know, when you finish with this book, you come away with a holistic legacy of Dream, not just Dream, the basketball player. And it seems to be that the legacy is of him giving to others, but not taking credit, not getting credit. You know, people do things and they try to take it, but they don't get it. He never tried to take it. Can you talk about that legacy and just how many people he's helped that nobody knows about unless somebody has a camera that leaks out a video like the Giannis?
Right. Yeah, I'm actually really happy that that shines through in the book because that is the ultimate message that I wanted to show. It really goes back to Islam. Like, if you look in the Quran, there are passages that talk about giving in secret. And charity is such a huge part of the religion. And it talks about, giving in private. Don't give so others can see that you're giving. Just give and give, endlessly. And he so embodies that. There are so many stories in the book that I got from random people about how he helped them. Or, for instance, in Toronto, for that chapter, he gets traded there right after 9/11, and he helps fund this mosque that could not get funding because banks were hesitant to work with Muslim people. You would never know about that because there's never press releases saying Olajuwon donated X amount of money to this place. In fact, it would be disrespectful in Olajuwon's eyes to share the amount. And so that's why in the book, you never see the specific amounts, but more so just the overall sentiment of giving without sharing. And to me, I think he was taught that, right? He was taught that from Moses Malone. He was taught that from Carol Dawson. He was taught that from Yomi Sangodei, the Nigerian superstar. If you are, over 50 and the youngest, most brightest players are coming to you at this stage in your life to learn from you, I mean, that just says it all. This is the ultimate respect.
You are headed on a book tour, and I believe one of
I'm
the
headed on a book tour.
I believe one of the stops is here in Philadelphia. So
Yes.
tell people how they can see you on tour and how they can get this fantastic book.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, I'm going to be speaking at UPenn. I believe it's on the 21st. There is a link to registration, which is on my Twitter when I posted the graphic of the event, but I will keep posting it. If you can't find it, just search my name in Penn and you register for the event. I'm so excited.
We can't wait to have you here. The book is Dream, the Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon. Miran Fader, thank you so much for the time and best of luck with the book.
Oh, thank you both so much. That was fun.
What a good book. What a great interview.
It was such a fun interview, and it really is an insightful book, especially for somebody of my generation that adored Hakeem Olajuwon as a player. However, for her to point out at the end of the interview that it's amazing that somebody over the age of 50 would be seeking advice from someone. All I'm doing is sitting there the second she says that, and I'm sitting there going, hello.
I was wondering if you felt like shots were fired or something like that. Like inadvertently, she's just trying to tell
I
the
was
story.
waiting for you to say that you under 50 doesn't ask me over 50 for
No,
any
we were talking
advice.
about important things. That can be the final thought for this week. Then I don't ask you a damn thing. Thanks for
That's
joining
right.
us
This
this week.
person over 50, nobody's asking
Thanks
advice
for
from.
joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.